This is an episode where Laura is trying to find out a bit more about the man who killed her daughter, Betty, in the hit-and-run accident. And up until now, she's been almost frozen in grief, but this is the point at which she suddenly starts to recover slightly from that and acquire a kind of raw anger. She's on her way to see a man called David Bradley, who was the pathologist who signed off the report on her daughter's death. I drive down the Esplanade. It is a harsh, grey day. Few people are out and the shops are doing poor trade. Suddenly, a plastic bag swoops down from the high periphery of my vision and flaps on my car windscreen with a slap and flutter. Startled, I flip on the windscreen wipers, which whisk the bag to and fro before throwing it back up into the air. I slow right down to catch my breath, and see, as I glance to my left, that Mr. Young the Chippy has boarded up his window and hung a closed sign on his door. Odd, I think, how one shop closing can make a whole row of retail outlets look derelict. It seems so quiet downtown. A lone dog lopes across the road in front of me, the last animal alive in a post-apocalyptic landscape. I shake my head. This trip is taking all my nerve. I can't allow myself to be unsettled by a plastic bag. Bradley's office is at the far end of Southside Road, almost out of town, in a cluster of municipal buildings of the sort that members of the public don't usually need to visit. The buildings themselves are ugly brick cubes, huddled close together just off the main road, exposed to the wind that whips smartly down from the rise. A sea view, that rectangle so greatly beloved of all those who don't live near the sea, who don't have to look out of their windows and see the endless crash of it day after day. Such a view is Bradley's. He's expecting me. As I sit down, we exchange the briefest of preliminary remarks. Glancing at his desk, I see that his report lies on it, ready for me. He pushes it towards me. "Take a look," he says. "Then ask me anything you want to know." It's in a pale green plastic folder. Betty's full name and date of birth are written in a neat, sloping hand on a sticker in the top right-hand corner. I reach for it and pull it onto my lap, opening the cover quickly. I can't allow myself to hesitate. It's all here. The bleeding, the lung and chest trauma, cause of death, was multiple internal injuries. It's easier to read than I had expected. The terminology renders me professional. I scan it once, then read it slowly and properly from the top. While I do, Bradley waits, half turned away from me in his revolving chair, attendant but detached. "Why was this break so bad?" I ask. "The left femur." I still have my head down, reading. Betty's left leg was broken in two places. It's not the kind of thing I was planning on asking him about. The break to the femur did not kill Betty after all. It was the internal bleeding did that. Bradley pauses. This is uncharacteristic of him and makes me look up. His face is still expressionless. The vehicle had bull bars. We stare at each other. And all at once, I understand his pause. He has stepped outside the remit of our discussion and is giving me a detail that I do not need to know. The car had bull bars. That means it was a four-wheel drive. I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. I realise that, until now, I have had no physical image of the vehicle that killed my daughter. Had I been asked to conjure one, I would have thought of something old, second-hand, driven by a youth or a man in his 20s, perhaps, someone a little careless but still within the speed limit. How fast he was driving is now in doubt. What he will be charged with is also, now, in doubt. I am realising something. It is coming over me in a wave, like one of those dramatic climaxes in a disaster movie, when the scene goes into slow motion so you can observe the expression on the actor's face as he or she leaps from the path of danger, a rush of water, a wall of flame, a falling building. Up until now, the fact of Betty's death has obscured the manner of it. The driver of the car that killed my daughter was not some callow youth in a beaten-up second-hand rust bucket. The driver was a man who could spend tens of thousands of pounds on a gleaming 4x4 with bull bars. This driver, this faceless, mythical creature whom I have refused to admit into my thinking, is no longer some shadowy thing, a grey ghost who came and took my Betty. He is taking shape, acquiring substance with each new detail that I learn about him. I don't know whether Bradley can guess at what is forming in my head, but he adds, "It is unproven that he was driving at excessive speed, Laura." "I know," I say shortly. All at once, I am suspicious. "Why do you say that?" Bradley sighs. "He had convictions, didn't he? He had previous." I'm fishing. Bradley removes his glasses and looks at them as if they don't belong to him. He glances to one side, out of his window, puts his glasses back on, and looks at me. "Laura," he says, "I'm sorry, but I'm speaking to you in an official capacity." He intends this as obfuscation rather than confirmation, but I know it to be both.